ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode explores, expands, and evolves the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity, joy, and exponential growth. And now, here is your host, Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to another Adventures in Truth livecast. My name is Jim Case, and I am the host of the show. Welcome to the show. We got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking about artificial intelligence, and it's kind of a strange topic for me. We're going to get into some of the AI stuff in detail, but really talking about this whole sort of the consciousness of AI, the idea of it and the energy of it and how we're using it and how it's being brought into the world. And understanding kind of, like everything, it's all about energy. It's all about how it's produced. You know, I think it's amazing the things that I've seen happen in my lifetime with regard to technology, with regard to everything I have around me. I mean, the fact that I'm sitting here having this conversation with you is an extraordinary thing. And there are a lot of things about AI that are a part of this. I was looking at some of the things, some of the best examples of AI, in case you think that we're not inundated already. Face detection and recognition, text editors and autocorrect, search and recommendation algorithms, chatbots, digital assistants, social media, e-payments. Those are just a few of the places, examples where AI is already a part of our experience. So I'm excited today to have Peter Jennings back on the show with me, an amazing author and incredible human being who I'll give you some more information about him in just a sec. But we're going to talk deeply. He actually suggested the topic, so I'm even more excited because I know he's got some things he wants to kind of throw out on the table, and then we'll walk through this together in really looking at the energy of it and what motivates it. Because I think that, again, fear is a choice. We have the ability to bring these things into the world and to create these things. And are we creating them from what space are we creating from? What energy are we bringing to this? And how much of it is being used to trigger more fear? And how much is just triggering all the way across the board so that we're adding a lot of fear to a process that doesn't require it? But is that because of how we feel about it, or is it because of the way it's being utilized and the way it's being created? So we're going to kind of go into all of that a little bit today and see where we get with that. In the meantime, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about my favorite thing, which is my book. We'll see in just a sec. FearIsACHoiceBook.com. Please check it out to learn more about my book, Fear is a Choice. But before we go there, I just wanted to say, if you are out there and you're watching or listening, if you'd like to interact with us, you can tap into the lives all over Facebook, and particularly at the Adventures in Truth Facebook page. If you have questions or comments, we'd love to hear them. We'll bring them on the show, and Peter and I can interact with you guys here on the show. Fear is a Choice book. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all of you who have ordered the book, for those of you who have reviewed the book. if you haven't had a chance to offer a review, I'd so appreciate it, because it really helps more and more people get to be exposed, and it shows up in searches and shows up in Amazon in a more pronounced way. So all of your help there is appreciated, but that you are reading it, that you are getting from it what I intended, is extraordinary. And I appreciate you all for out there for doing that. Fears of Choice is really about changing our relationship with fear. It's about how we move into the world and how we move into our lives in a way that is from an opportunity-based experience and not a fear-based consciousness. And this book helps you to migrate through that, to see the evolution of fear in the human experience, to see how we've adopted that and how we pick up that mantle as we become more aware of our own world, and then how we can change that relationship so that we're not living in a dumbed down experience, because really that's what fear does for us. It dumbs down the brilliance of all that we are. So www.fearsofchoicebook.com, check it out. All the order links are there to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and IndieBound and all that good stuff. And again, thank you. And again, pick it up. We'll talk to you. We'll see you on the other side of the break. All right, my world is good. We'll go through My World is Good. This is the year of conscious creation. We are already, can you believe we are already at the end of July? This has been an extraordinary year so far. And My World is Good for me has been a big part of helping to evolve this idea of let's change our relationship with fear. Let's change the relationship with all the fear mongering and all of the nonsense that's out in the outside world. And remember that the things that we focus into, the things that we are perceiving in the reality that we see, is simply a reflection of the beliefs, ideas, and concepts that we hold about ourselves and our world and our interaction in the world and our relationships and all of that stuff. So My World is Good is about a conscious focus into creating a positive change in your world, because I believe we are 7.5 billion unique worlds that are inhabiting this planet. And that uniqueness is important, because remember, you are the only one who can live your life. You're the only one who can change your life. You're the only one who can create your life. So because that is the case, and I know I hear the noise, oh, but what about this and what about that? It still requires your consent energetically. It still requires you to participate. And participation can be conscious or unconscious. Participation can be active or inactive, remember? So My World is Good as a way to step in a neutral, positive way that builds an energy within your world that can harmonize us as we each are within our world. So as My World is Good, my world is good, and it builds and strengthens. And as you do the same, and you do the same, and you do the same, as we come together, we harmonize, we build this powerful energy of seeing the goodness in the world, and then we create a powerful tipping point by doing so. That tipping point is the influence into what I call the mass consciousness. It is the influence into that body of energy that we all contribute to on a daily basis. And the more we can bring goodness to that, the more we can shift this negative kind of focused experience. And so My World is Good is easy. It doesn't require anything but your energy and your focus and attention. My world is good. My world is good. Take it in, feel it, breathe it, speak it, and then feel it some more. And I guarantee you will begin to see change immediately and rapidly when you can do that. Because when you tune into the goodness in your life, you will begin to see it all over the place. Remember, perception, perception, perception. So change that perception. Let's put My World is Good in front, and then see what you perceive as a result of that. It will blow your mind. My World is Good. Thank you for being part of it. Thank you for continuing it. Love to hear your stories. So please, as you see the posts around, don't be afraid. Write something down. Share an experience that you had. Let us know how your life is changing as a result of it. I appreciate you. And we're going to get on the other side of the break now. And I'm going to bring in Peter and have a great conversation about AI. And we'll be right back. All right, guys, artificial intelligence, man's need to understand. Give me just a second here. I want to share with you some information about Peter before we begin. All right. Peter has written a whole ton of books. Peter Jennings is a creative nonfiction writer and acclaimed author whose books include, and I'll reference some of these, but the current book, Pushing the Boundaries, is holy criminy, I'm having trouble with my buttons today. That's a surprise, isn't it? Here it is, Pushing the Boundaries, and we're going to talk with him about that in just a second. So Peter, prior to turning to writing full-time, Peter spent a career in corporate communications, running agencies, handling marketing, advertising, branding, public relations, and public and the production of multimedia content, including videos, websites, and social media elements. Clients include hundreds of top-ranked businesses in all types and sizes, from McDonald's, Procter & Gamble, RBC, IBM, Coca-Cola, and as well as niche startups. So following an education in Upper Canada College, he attended Trinity College, University of Toronto, and worked at the campus radio station. And he's been a guest lecturer on marketing at Centennial College and at the Government of Ontario Self-Employment Assistance Program. And so in addition to all that, he's also an incredible author who is now written a new book, and I'm bringing him into the fold. Hi, Peter. Peter.
Hey,
sorry, all over the place this morning. I am a little bit.
Good to see you, Jim. And by the way, my world is good because of you, sir.
Thank you.
No, seriously, I really enjoy talking with you, listening to you. I always feel better for interchanges like this. The other thing I want to say, and folks, I'm not saying it just because Jim is here, but Fear is a Choice is a great book. Read it. It's deep. It's detailed. Jim's a great writer, even though he didn't feel he should be writing books. he does write well. And it's a great book. It really is, Jim.
Thank you.
I've written a book on happiness. I believe happiness is a choice.
Yes.
So just as happiness is a choice, so is fear. And we'll probably get into that because I got to tell you, I'm expressing a little bit of fear about AI. But
yes, let's dive right in. We got
we'll dive in. Okay. Well, yeah. Let me get us into it. I've been reading a book by a guy by the name of Yuval Noah Harari, which is called 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. Hmm. And he talks about in 2017, so what's that, 4 years ago, Google's Alpha Zero program defeated the Stockfish 8 program at chess without ever losing in 100 games. Now, what's important about this? Stockfish 8, I didn't know this, but it was the world's leading computer chess program with literally centuries of chess moves burned into its database. It would calculate 70 million chess positions every second. Alpha Zero, on the other hand, had none of that. It used only the latest machine learning AI principles, and it learned how to play chess and defeat Stockfish 8 in 4 hours, and here's the important thing, with no humans at all. And that's pretty impressive, but I gotta tell you, I found it a little scary because Jim, you said, and we've talked about this, are we able to create intelligence when we ignore the realities of our world and our universe? There's an awful lot of stuff going on right now, particularly in an era of COVID, the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you're doing in Colorado. We're actually doing pretty well here in Ontario, where I live in Canada, but should we be worried about AI, or should we be worried about fixing some of the problems we have?
Yeah, and you know, the idea of artificial intelligence, it you know, we were talking about this a little bit. The definition is a little weird. I mean, the title is a little weird in and of itself.
Yeah.
But to your point, is where are we going with this? Is this just an exercise in ego? You know, is this just an exercise in people wanting to show that they can demonstrate? I'm not sure what the demonstration is. You said something that sparked something, and then I lost it about the idea of how it's created and why it's created. and what is the end game? Well, part of the end game we're looking at, as I talked about in the beginning, the fact that we're sitting here doing this is in some form due to artificial intelligence.
Yes.
And the building of that. So it's like so many things in our world where there's this sort of double-edged sword where you say, wow, technology is, look at what I can do with it. And then the flip side of that is, look at what can be done to me with it.
Yeah, exactly. And that, I think, is the dilemma, Jim, because you're right. I mean, technology is amazing. You've cited a number of examples where AI has been very helpful. There is talk that AI will be very helpful with illness, extending our age, and lots of good stuff like that. But if it's left to get out of control, where does it go? I mean, we live in an era where young people today are not having one career, as I pretty much did. Mm-hmm. They're having several careers. Now, you've done that, Jim, so you've bopped around. But, is AI going to change all that? Are we going to not have jobs because computers and robots and whatnot will be doing it all? And where does that leave us? Some people would say, hey, that's great. I don't want to have a job. Well, okay, but how are you going to earn money to put food in your belly and have a place to live and a car to drive or whatever, you know?
Yep. So, something interesting I want to throw in the mix before we go to break. I don't know if you're familiar with Florence Scovel Shinn. She's an author. She wrote I can't remember the name of the book. But the concept of the book was that we have managed to create the Watchman's Rattle, I think it is.
Okay.
We have created already without the advent of AI, we have already created on this planet problems that our mind has no ability to solve.
Hmm.
And here we are creating more things that have the potential for being problems that we don't have a way of managing. If you're imbuing something with a level of ability, intelligence, how do you manage that? How do you, the other piece of this that I want to dive into a little bit too is I remember reading years ago this idea that in creating realities and in experiencing alternate realities and things of that nature, that we do that every day in the sense that where do you think movies come from? Where do you think books come from? They are all part of this consciousness, our consciousness. These are alternate realities that we are bringing into the planet as a viewpoint of potentiality. And here I am in my own life going, movies that I saw in the 70s that we thought were like, that's silly. You know, what are you talking about? I mean, even something silly like Back to the Future, which is what, like 50 years old or 40 or whatever it is.
And
flashing forward to now when we hit 2021, when Marty came back and, you know, I'm not trying to get goofy about it, but I'm just like, this is so interesting that it's evolving in such a way that we're getting to see some of the stuff that we grew up looking at showing up as things in our actual world. We can talk to a watch. We can do all of these things. So I want to kind of get those juices flowing because I want to take a moment here and get into some focus because of the topic particularly. But I want to give us a few minutes to just focus in to that moment of focus. So we'll be right back, Peter. I'll have you back in just a second. We're going to dive into that. All right. And taking that moment of focus. So at the beginning of every show, after we dive into the topic for a minute, I love to then bring our energy together. You know, where two or more are gathered, all of us together contributing our energy to this topic just helps to evolve it, helps us to go deeper into that process. So what I'd like you to do is begin by breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. And just let yourself rest into this space where you are right now in this moment. And as you breathe, become aware of your breath. And what I mean by that is just focus on how you breathe when you breathe. As you take that inhale through the nose, where do you feel it in your body? Do you feel it in the top of your chest? Do you feel it in your belly? Do you feel it in your back? Where do you feel your breath? Where do you experience it? As you inhale through the nose and exhale from the mouth, just begin to focus into the breath, bringing your awareness into your heart, into the center of your chest. as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. Remember that breath is the cornerstone, is the foundation of the human life experience, right? Breath is what keeps us animated. Breath is what keeps this body alive. And in my life, breath is about learning how to manage energy, because this is prana, this is chi, this is life force that we take in every moment of every day to keep this whole apparatus going and to keep this energy, this beautiful energy that we are, to keep it evolving and moving. But being on the planet, we use breath. Breath is what connects us to our energy. Breath is what connects us to the energy of the planet, to the energy of ourselves, to the energy of our life experience. So as you're breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth, just become centered and powerfully focused into your heart, into the center of your chest. And as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth, I want you to consciously emanate the energy of love. I just want you to command, I emanate. I choose to emanate and radiate the energy of pure love from the center of my heart, from the center of my being, my spark of the divine. I emanate and radiate the energy of pure love. And that pure love is illuminated by the light of loving kindness. And as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth, palpably feel that energy as it emanates into your field, as it moves from the core of you out into your field, experiencing this pure, unconditional love illuminated by the light of loving kindness. With each breath, as you inhale, that energy becomes larger. And as it moves into your field, experience it as a giant orb of pure, unconditional love. And then within that orb, see it lit up with the light of loving kindness. And be in that experience as it expands. And notice how far away from your physical body that orb expands in order to embrace your field, in order to embrace the energy of all that you are. And as you do that, feel that warmth, feel that energy as it saturates your field, that love saturating every element of your field and illuminating you with the light of love and kindness, so that you are a beacon of love. You are an expression of that love. Any energy moving out of you is moved through that space of love, so that what you share is filled with that energy. Energy that comes into your space that you interact with is also filtered through that love because of that giant orb of beautiful energy that you carry. And as you continue breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth, just be in that bath, be in that shower, be in that extraordinary embrace of unconditional love as you feel it and experience it. And let's take a moment now and focus into the breath. We're going to inhale to a count of four. We're going to hold at the top. We're going to exhale to a count of six, so that we purge and release all of that excess energy and air. And then we rest into that void space, the emptiness that I call the place of anticipation for the next moment. And so as we focus into the breath, we inhale to a count of four, inhaling two, three, four. Feel that fullness, relax the shoulders and the neck, and then consciously releasing two, three, four, five, getting it all out, six, good, and resting in that void space for just a moment, feeling the emptiness, and then choosing and engaging the lungs as you inhale, two, three, four, holding, embracing the fullness, feeling the richness of the fullness, and then choosing to surrender it right now in the breath. Two, three, four, five, six. And as that breath leaves you, just be in the space of allowing, be in the space of anticipation as you engage the lungs and inhale. Two, three, four. Feeling the fullness, feeling the relaxation of the fullness, and then consciously choosing to surrender. Two, three, four, five, six. And again, into that space of allowing, that space of anticipation in the moment of creation, inhaling as you engage the lungs. Two, three, four, and then resting at the top. and then surrendering it. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and staying in, relishing the emptiness, relishing the void, that space of creation. And now continue that breath cycle on your own for another few rounds, staying focused deeply into the process, staying relaxed in the process of creation. Every breath is a moment of creation. Every breath is something new, because you're taking new energy, you're releasing old energy, and you do that hundreds, if not thousands of times a day. New moments of creation, every moment. You can simply stop and tune into that moment of creation to realign your energy, to realign your focus as you continue to breathe through this cycle. And now just let these words wash over you as you continue through the breath cycle. I am the evolution of God realized as matter. I inform and guide this expression as the pure expression of God. I show up as God. I connect as God. I align as God. I am creation realized. And from that, I create, I expand, and I engage. I am. And breathing that in. And just allowing yourself to relax into this moment as you bring yourself present once again, coming back into the conversation as we pick up with Peter diving more deeply into the process of AI.
Peter waking up. He always goes to sleep for those days. I'm not off.
Takes you into that quiet place.
It sure does. It's wonderful, Jim. Thank you for that. Getting back into the conversation, you know, I think that up until now, we've had a fairly linear, logical development of concepts and inventions, ideas. Let's go back over 100 years ago when the Wright brothers flew at Kitty Hawk. And from there, they started developing better, faster, better built airplanes. Charlie Lindbergh made it happen by flying to Paris, you know, to prove that you could, in fact, go long distance. And from that, we got into TWA and various companies, and then jetliners, and eventually into space rockets and whatnot. That's all been fairly logical. AI, on the other hand, I think one of the things that I do find a little scary, if you will, is that it avoids a lot of that logic or that progression. It just goes, bam, we're off to the next race. And what are we going to do? Are we going to control that, or are we just going to let it happen? There are algorithms being prepared right now by scientists and data people that are allowing artificial intelligence to kind of interpret our emotions. Mm-hmm. And when you get into that kind of thing, well, then we're talking about computers becoming the Justin Biebers and Beyoncés of the world, making art like Frida Kahlo, writing books like Shakespeare. I mean, where does this stop?
Yeah.
Well, the question, I guess, really becomes, how do you control the development? Again, in the old days, it was natural, it was progressive, it happened. Now it's just slam, bang, thank you, ma'am, we're off and running. And that to me is a little scary. I don't know how you feel about that, Jim.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And this segment, I intentionally said as arrogance or consciousness. And as you were talking, I was vacillating back and forth and thinking, you know, this is really interesting. Can it be anything? So we still strive to understand what this mechanism is called our brain. And then beyond the brain, we still strive to understand what is the mind and how does it work and what is consciousness and things that we have still very little understanding of.
Yes.
And yet we want to create an artificial example of it. And I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. Well, maybe it's a way of putting it outside of ourselves so that we can begin to better understand. Except where I found the flaw in my thought process is you can't create what you don't know. Mm-hmm. So all you know is ego. And I say ego because it's the best way I know to describe that chunk of consciousness, but is that it is that human bound consciousness that is the part of us that runs the physical bodies on the planet. So we are recreating the ego in an artificial environment to help us run our world when we already let our ego run our world because of our lack of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that a conundrum? Would that fit under conundrum, or would that fit under just plain stupid?
Yeah. Well, and I got to tell you, I have a problem with the whole nomenclature around AI, artificial intelligence. I mean, artificial, come on, what's artificial? It's fake. It's bogus. It's unreal. And intelligence really is a human quality of brilliance and perception, understanding, agility. I think really we should be talking about maybe a computer brain rather than artificial intelligence. Now, I don't expect Peter Jennings is going to rewrite the lingo that's become accepted, but yeah. I do have a problem with AI. I don't think it's a good term. There we are.
So, and I don't disagree with you. I kind of contemplate more deeply into this, going, this is really interesting. Why do we want to add another layer of brain? Our minds are actually, interestingly enough, this is as artificial as the intelligence they're attempting to create, right? Mm-hmm. If we understand philosophy, or we understand the spiritual evolution, or the evolution of energy, this is no more real than the artificial intelligence that we're creating. And you kind of go, again, why would you? I get it, because it's helping so many things come to fruition on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But again, balance. Where is the balance here? Where is the? I think you see this, and I'm referencing movies because it's so interesting. Those windows into other realities. The continual theme of all of those types of movies is that there's a juncture in the movie where you go, where the lead character has some experience about the lack of love, or the lack of connection, or the lack of the important human element that doesn't exist in AI, and the ramifications of that experience, where we become more distant from each other because it's all artificial.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and
that's not a good thing. Right. It comes right back to the whole happiness nature. I think we talked last time, Jim, about, the professor at Harvard who's written a book called Bowling Alone. Mm-hmm. And it's the reason that Finland, for the third or fourth year running, is the happiest country in the world. And that's because over there and in so many other places, they believe in community. Yeah. They believe in people being together, doing things together, talking together, solving problems together, dancing together, whatever. But community is so important. And here in North America, we're losing our sense of community, to your point. And if we're going to try and replace it with computers, well, I don't think so. and you know, the other issue becomes, how do you tell a scientist or a data processing expert to kind of slow down or back off? I mean, these guys are in the business of taking computers and getting them to do more. And Jim, as you pointed out, that can be good because we've got lots of AI recognition that's doing great things for us. Mm-hmm. And if it ends up enhancing our lives by extending our lives, or getting rid of illnesses and that sort of thing, that's marvelous. But if it starts taking over our arts and, as I said, you know, singing better than Beyonce, that's not good. I don't want to hear a computer do that.
I'm with you on that one. And this is a good note. We're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to dive into the next segment when we come back. But when we come back, Peter's going to share some of the amazing work that he continues to do in his writing and talk about whatever it is he's going to talk about today for a few minutes with y'all. And we're going to do that right after the break. So we'll be right back right after this. Whoops.
Science of Transformation Method, and I can't tell you the difference that it's made in my life.
This program is all about you coming into the greatest form of you. Guys, you need some assistance. You need help changing your relationship with fear. That is what my entire platform is about. And I would love to work with you. I'd love to be able to help you to navigate through all the places that you've anchored your experience down into fear and helping you to reframe your experience, helping you to release those anchors and to completely reframe your world so that you can begin to move forward to achieve and experience the things that you are looking to experience in your life. Again, remember that in a fear-based consciousness, we're in a very limited viewpoint. And what I do with my work in working with you is to break that down, to open up to the potentials and opportunity that are available to you so that you can begin to embrace those potentialities and see where they lead. And when you're in fear, they're not available to you. You've dumbed down your experience. And what I can do, what I do in my working with my program is to help you reestablish the connection to that larger part of yourself, but to remember who you are and to take you into being able to apply that practically in the world today so that you are able to navigate this world in a way that is unlike any place you've been before, because you're experiencing yourself in a newly empowered, newly enlivened way that takes you to the places that you always wanted to go. So check it out. Head up to the website, www.thesciencetransformation.com. You can book a free introductory session with me. We can chat about what you're looking for and how I might best be able to serve, and also doing some introductory packages. So check it out, and we'll be right back with some more fun with Peter. Or actually, we don't have to go right away. We can come right back and bring Peter in. I forget. My buttons do amazing things with this AI thing.
Tim, I should just add, you know, when you're talking about fear, Jack Canfield, mm-hmm. who is the co-author of the incredibly successful Chicken Soup for the Soul series, mm-hmm. Jack wrote the foreword for my newest book, Pushing the Boundaries. And in his foreword, he says, the biggest thing that holds us back is fear. And he's quite right. And he makes a case, if you can overcome that fear of change, then you can really accelerate your life.
Absolutely.
So, he's with you all the way on that one, my friend.
All right, Peter, here you go.
Okay.
Say hi to the people.
Thank you, Jim. You're very kind to give me this moment. I am an author of 8 nonfiction books, one of which is for kids. And I'm going to be bringing out later this year, or my publisher is, a book that I self-published a few years ago called Why Being Happy Matters. Well, we're retitling it A Guide to Happiness, and it's going to be updated. And anyway, there'll be more about that. But the book I'm really pumped about at the moment is the one I just referenced, Pushing the Boundaries, How to Get More Out of Life. I write books to hopefully inspire my readers, my followers, to enhance their own lives. And in Pushing the Boundaries, what I've done is interviewed 32 people from around the world, many of them well-known, who explain how they manage to overcome fear, how they manage to think outside the box, color outside the lines, and go where most of us simply would not go to move ahead. We're talking people like Nick Wallenda. I spent a fascinating afternoon with Nick at his residence in Sarasota, Florida. He's a guy who walked across Niagara Falls and the Grand Canyon on a tightrope. And you know what? Nick told me he has never in his life felt fear. Now, can you imagine that? Walking with a tightrope over the Grand Canyon or Niagara Falls and having no fear. But he explains how he feels, and it's quite fascinating. I learned actually earlier today, to my sadness, that one of the people I profiled, a man by the name of Terry Jaye, has passed away. Terry fought every kind of cancer you can imagine that assaulted his body. He fought this for 10 years. He lived in the province of New Brunswick here in Canada. And he went to Montreal and Toronto and even down to Los Angeles to try to overcome this disease. Unfortunately, it took him not too long ago, but his spirit and his inspiration to move ahead and not throw in the towel is really heartwarming. Anyway, there are 32 people in the book, and I'm already getting great feedback from readers who indeed do find it inspirational. I believe it's a game changer. I really believe it's a book that can change people's lives. So you can find out more at pushingtheboundaries.life. And you can order it on Amazon, all the usual places. So, Jim, thank you for allowing me to talk about the book. And maybe we should get back. We'll talk more about AI.
Absolutely. And I'm just going to throw it up here one more time. And give them that. I didn't have that address. So could you give us that address one more time?
Pushingtheboundaries.life.
Pushingtheboundaries.life.
It tells you who's in the book. It tells you all about the book and how you can order it. And it's selling very well, I must say.
Excellent. Good to hear. Pushing the Boundaries. There it is on the screen. And you can find out more about Peter at peterjennings.me or .me.
Right.
And I think you have all your information about all the various books you have there.
I do, yeah.
And excellent. All right. So.
So, yeah, AI. I mean, I think, and Jim, you brought this up earlier. I think one of the things we have to be careful about here is we haven't really solved many of our problems on Earth. To do with climate, to do with politics, to do with disease,
money.
And money, you know. It's like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and Richard Branson spending billions of dollars to go into the edge of space. Okay, I guess you need guys like that. I mean, I suppose the Wright brothers didn't have billions, but they had enough money to build a plane and fly it. So, yeah, you need human beings involved. You should have business involved, not leave it all up to government. On the other hand, those billions of dollars that those guys are spending, and by the way, not giving anything to taxes, should they be spending that money on improving our lives rather than going into the edge of space? It's all other dilemma, but it's like AI. We have so much work that we could be and should be doing here on Earth to improve things. Why are we even considering having computers run things when we should be running them ourselves? We should be running computers, not the other way around.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. And I think it's, you know, as we move into the next segment, talking about, are we building tools of control or tools of freedom? And this is slowly building us into this conversation about how much of this is driven by fear. How much of this is being used to drive fear? That's the part of it that concerns me is, you know, as you look at, it's so hard anymore to see really genuine stories of things that are about positive change and growth because they're underpinned by fear. They're underpinned by, see, you don't need to be as afraid because now we have this thing. as opposed to now you can be free of fear because we have this thing, because we have this ability, because we have this. And here we are again in this dilemma of creating something artificial that we haven't mastered naturally.
Mm.
Right? We haven't mastered, we have no mastery of conscious and unconscious. We have no mastery of how to focus our intention. We know that for many, the idea is that we use will to create, and will is not the point of creation. Will is will. Will is force. Will is making things try to happen. And so things don't come as organically, and they're not developed organically because we're not coming from that place where we're, oh, how is this helping us free ourselves from the binds of the trappings of the subconscious mind? How are these things creating a freedom within our experience to express all of who we are in a safe way that allows us to connect more deeply because we're not afraid to be. You can't be artificial intelligence. You can apply it. You can use it. But it we're still human beings having this experience. And so are these tools really about developing more freedom? And if they are, how can we utilize them to experience more freedom, to experience more liberation, more joy, more of the things that we're here for?
Well, Jim, I think, and I have given thought to this, I think that what we ought to be doing with artificial intelligence is deploying it on specific applications, not just saying, hey, let's build better computers and bigger computers and load them up with all sorts of memory.
Better ways to get your money. That's all the list that I read earlier is all about how to get more money.
It's true. The automobile industry. I mean, there are lots of Joe jobs, monotonous, tiresome jobs that humans don't like doing and are done now by robots. Well, that's great because that was an application and people designed computers and AI to do that. I mentioned earlier, healthcare. AI should be able to help us solve some health dilemmas. They should be able to help us live longer, disease-free lives. Because, hey, my mom died last year at age 100. She always said I had her genes, so I've been fairly flippant by saying, great, I'm going to hang into 110. And I'd like to, but I'd like to have my synapses working, thank you very much, rather than be sitting, you know, in the corner eating babble. So I think what we want to do is use AI on an application basis. We got a problem. Can AI solve it? Great. Let's get all these brilliant scientists and data processing geniuses and guys, here's the problem. Go fix it. Let's work on applications rather than just building AI to the point where I think then it is scary. If it's solving problems, if it's working on specific applications, great. That to me is getting back to what I was describing before, Jim, is more of a natural evolution as opposed to just, wow, let's go.
And what you triggered for me was this idea of service too, in service too, that that as a human, we want, this is why it's so fascinating to me. Consciousness, ultimately, anywhere you read in Eastern philosophy is all about the mind becoming of service to the soul, the mind becoming of service to the greater expression of who we are. Mm-hmm. So same thing here. If you're going to use artificial intelligence, then make it so that it is of service to the greater, larger picture, not another version of a mind out of control.
Right.
Or a mind that, you know, so now we know we can control mind because we can control how it does these things. Well, if we can control it here, why aren't we controlling it here inside us? If you can manufacture a way to control the mind outside of the body, this fake thing, then why are we not learning how to do that? Again, from the perspective of connection and building a better planet and all the things you mentioned earlier, climate change and all that stuff, it's all significant and important. So as we come to our final segment, one of the things that strikes me about this is I was thinking in terms of creation and creating positive things. And then I realized, you know, fear-based consciousness creates too. You are continually creating, whether you are unconscious, whether you're conscious, whether whatever it is, we're in creation all the time. And so fear-based consciousness creates. So there is no argument there. Yes, you do create, but are you creating what you really want? Are you creating something of value? Are you creating something that moves the needle for the human experience forward into deeper connection, deeper love, deeper understanding, deeper awareness of our place in the universe, so to speak?
Yeah, that's a toughie. Yeah. That's a real dilemma. Especially as it pertains to AI. You know, you put AI on top of that, and again, it comes down to, do you think the people, the scientists, the data processing experts, do you think they're going to be able to back off this development of artificial intelligence to the point you make, Jim, and just say, okay, let's make it work on apps and just move it ahead in more of a logical, progressive standpoint, which we control. I think that's the whole thing. If we're controlling it, fine. If we're being controlled, that's not fine. That's no good.
Yep. And that's really, isn't that the dilemma we live in at this moment?
Yeah.
We are confronted by fear-based consciousness. And while I hate to bring the energy into the space, it's important to recognize the person who was the previous president continues to beat fear-based consciousness constantly every single day, and people are buying it every single day. It is changing the complexion of our world because we are allowing AI in one form or another to run the experience, and it's becoming, I mean, look at the situation. If you just take a snapshot of our current situations, you know, within the United States particularly, you see this panorama of fear. You see this panorama of nonstop fear-based management, control, do, and all these things that do not give anyone a sense of freedom, do not give anyone a sense. They're thinking it's freedom because it's restriction that's creating the illusion of freedom, right? It's a restriction, but the thing that you're doing is restricting. You're not expanding. But again, one of the things that you said that struck me was this, it's all part of our evolution. It's here. It's in our world. It's a part of the process of human evolution. And so here we are in this evolution. Do we stop at any point to go, is this the smartest direction? Is this the best direction for who we are, or is this the best direction for a limited bunch of people who think mind is more important than anything else?
Well, I mean, Jim, you brought up politics, so I'll grab that for a second. I think it's sad that so many of the Republicans and Democrats are fighting for their party and fighting to be reelected and this, that, and the other thing. And I want to say, well, and I'm a Canadian, so I don't have a dog in the race. On the other hand, I constantly watch CNN and MSNBC and even watch Fox to see what the other side's doing. And they go, like, when are you guys going to stop and say, let's get together and do things for the country? Let's make the U.S. the best place in the world, as opposed to this fighting between parties. It's very sad to me that it's devolved to that. And you referred to Trump, but he's part of what that devolution's all about. Yep. It's sad. And I don't know how to fix it. I'm not the guy who can fix it. But, boy, I'd love to see your country just get back to saying, let's work on being the best country we can, not the best Democrat, not the best Republican.
And that's the challenge, I think, with the way things are so charged. Why do we want to bring a technology like this into an environment like this? Because it can only be used to separate. And it's already being used that way. It's already starting. That process has already begun to continue this divide process. So the question becomes, in the end, how do we, so how do we, as we bring the show to a close, how do we responsibly and in integrity to the human experience into why, you know, all of us, I guess, have versions of why we're here. Because if you're coming from a purely religious perspective, then there isn't necessarily the same sense of impending doom necessarily, or sense of, because it's already fear-based. That consciousness is already based in rigid fear. So it just becomes a challenge to me that so we have artificial intelligence. How are we going to integrate into our experience more deeply so that this thing becomes a tool rather than something else that we've lost control of, something else that we don't have a way to manage?
Totally. We must use it as a tool. And as I said before, I think the best way to do that is to tell all these technocrats, okay, here's an app, whether it's automotive or whatever the heck it is, here's an app, design the best way to confront that app and make it the best using AI, sure. But then it becomes very focused, very evolutionary, very beneficial and helpful. And to your point, Jim, it does create freedom rather than hemming us in.
Yeah, I was reminded in the intro online, I was talking about one of the examples that I used that I thought really lays a clear picture of how far off the mark we are, is our view of health. Mm-hmm. That our healthcare system, the healthcare system is designed around disease, not around wellness.
Totally.
And we're in a pandemic that no one that I've seen out in the world and at large is talking about wellness. They're talking about injecting chemicals to change the body structure, to battle something that they don't even understand. And yet there's no comprehension of the fact that if people were attending to their wellness, this would not be happening, because it would be a consciousness change. It would be an energetic change that shifts into a place of wellness. So, and we could spend another whole hour talking about that as well, but.
We couldn't need. But the point is very well taken. Yeah. Wellness rather than sickness. Yeah. Paying your doctor to keep you healthy, not to solve your sickness dilemmas. But as you say, it's a whole other topic. And I guess AI, if AI is used to promote wellness, great. Yes. That's another app. You know,
exactly.
Another logical app.
That's where it could be of value, because you can take, and I think that's been done to some degree, but it's only done to the degree that it keeps us still limited in our comprehension, and we still are beholden to the technology. And that's where I think it's backwards.
And as long as you have a Senator Paul arguing with Dr. Fauci the way they were doing, that again is so negative and not freeing at all.
Right.
Anyway, we're getting off topic, I guess.
Yeah, no. It's just perfect examples of. I don't think either side is right. I don't think either side, but there is one more humane side and one very less humane side.
Right on.
And. Is that a judgment on my part? Probably, but that's my experience of it. One's looking more humanely. So they both look like extremists, because one is pulling on the human level and one is pulling on the non-human level.
Yeah.
And the answer is not there in either place, in either extreme. So, you know, we got to come back to the center. But
yep.
Peter, as always, I'm overjoyed that you've been with me here again to have this amazing conversation. And I'm thrilled where the conversation went, because we got to touch on a lot of really cool things. And I want to give you the last 30 seconds to say whatever you'd like to say about our topic or whatever, to bring it to a close today, if you'd like.
Well, thank you, Jim. And I would like to thank you for having me on with you yet again. I really enjoy our times together. And my world is good. My world is better because spending time with you. I really need that.
Thank you, Peter. Thank
you. Again, I want to encourage people to get Jim's book, because fear is a choice, just like happiness is. And you will read the book, and you will come away a changed person. And that's always a good thing. We always need to change our minds and refresh our thinking and come up with new ideas. So thank you, Jim Case, for doing that. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure, Peter. It's always good to see you. And looking forward to the next time. Indeed. Everybody out there, thank you for being a part of the show. We'll see you next time. Have an amazing week wherever you are, and we'll talk very soon. Have a great day.
Bye, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth Livecast. Please like, subscribe, and share. If you'd like to learn more about Jim's book, Fear is a Choice, Unraveling the Illusion of Our Separation from Love, check it out at www.fearisachoicebook.com. Also check out Moments of Truth, a new offering from Adventures in Truth. If you'd like to work with Jim, check out www.thescientetransformation.com to book a session. Tune in live every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time and every Friday, 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Or look for our new releases and podcasts every Monday. Until next time, be well, and we'll see you again on Adventures in Truth Livecast.